What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
You're listening to The Exchange. Here's today's show.
Yes, we will. Scott, thank you very much. I'm Brian Sullivan, and here's what is topping the news right now. The markets and your money at a crucial point. What has worked for years? Buy big tech and forget about it has been a bust lately. Many stocks down big today. The NASDAQ off 2%. We'll show you and ask if the investing landscape has really changed. You know what's not selling off lately? TV stocks. Viacom, Discovery, Fox, all soaring. So with all the talk about Netflix, could TV be the new TV? And from traditional TV to traditional jobs, while you may want to forget college and all that debt, you'll make a fortune installing HVAC systems. That, plus why Americans are going into huge debt to buy one of the worst declining value assets that there is. Phil LeBeau with that story ahead, but let us begin right now with the markets. Dom Chu, we are seeing a spike in yield, and we are seeing a drop in tech, and my spider sense tells me they are related.
They are related, and they have to do with comments that Fed Chair Jerome Powell is making at the Wall Street Journal Jobs Summit, addressing some concerns about inflation, whether they be transitory, short-term, and whatnot. I'm sure you guys are going to talk about it a lot more as the show progresses. But those comments coming, and it does have an effect on the overall markets. We're now down 265 points. Now, that's important because we were just moments ago, within the last 2 or 3 minutes, near the lows of the day, down over 300 points for the Dow, but again, off 1%. The S&P 500 recovering as well, 37.79, the last trade there. And the NASDAQ saw underperforming, as it has been of late on down days, down about 1.75%, 12,761, the last trade there. Let's take a look at that move in yields and put it in context over the longer term. 1.53% is the last trade there for 10-year benchmark U.S. Treasury note yields. You've got to go all the way back to February of last year to find levels of that were like that. But remember, just in the last week or so, we saw 1.61% intraday. That was the high just in the last week for that 10-year note yield. So, yes, interest rates starting to rise. It may affect valuations for some of those higher growth stocks. And speaking of higher growth stocks, Tesla has arguably become emblematic of some of those trades where valuations have gotten up there. And, yes, they may have been justified at certain levels, but interest rates going up may have put the brakes on Tesla for now. You can see down 6%, 613 the last trade there. Remember, at the peaks, this was nearly an $850 billion company in terms of overall market value. We've slid about 30% since then. So keep an eye on Tesla shares and all those funds that own it. It could be a huge move higher, again, for rates, but it could be a big move lower for some of these types of stocks. Brian, I'll send things back over to you.
Yeah, not just that as well. It's sort of the bust out stock. Stay at home is over. Moderna down 15% this week. Peloton 14%. Everything that worked last year, not working this year. All right, Dom, thank you very much. Let's get more now on this big move in yields. Yields up 5% this week, which doesn't sound like a lot, Rick Santelli, but for the bond market, which is truly, you know, I've described it as a super tanker. It is big, it is slow, but when it moves, everything in its wake gets rocked.
No, and I can't disagree with that. But, you know, percentages are a rotten way to look at interest rates, especially U.S. interest rates that are at such historic lows. Remember, before COVID, the all-time low closing yield was around 136 for a 10-year. And here we are, not much above that, acting as if it's 10%. But it is a recalibration trade. And recalibration is about net change. And net change is pointed out by Sully is big. Look at intradays of 10s and 30s, up to 154 on 10s, up to 231 on 30s. This is significant. One-year chart, I want you to glean a couple of things. The current high closed 152, so it looks like we could have a shot at that today for 10s. But also look at the right side. Right around the third week in January, you see how that 10-year yield just shoots up? Go to the 30-year chart. You can see it there as well. Well, that was the Fed meeting. And I've been talking all day. The reason that occurred is because the dovishness gives the long end wings on the rates. They move higher because they don't believe that we're going to be putting any of this in check. The dovishness will continue. And should rates get a little unruly, stocks are teasing Powell. They want him to do QE. They want him to do the twist. They're waiting for that manipulation to keep long rates down. Finally, don't see much showing up on 10s to 2s, the yield curve trade. You see it there. That's a five-year chart. It's zooming. So we want to pay attention to this. It's funny how traders always get a sense. If the twist is coming, maybe this is the chart where you'll see it potentially showing up first. Brian, back to you.
All right, good stuff and a great analysis. As always, Rick Santelli. Rick, thank you very much. So let's follow up on that just a bit. And the biggest market theme of this year, tech taking a big hit. The triple Qs, the NASDAQ 100 ETF, heading toward three losing weeks in a row. And so many of the darlings of 2020 have gotten dumped this year. Look at this. This is only this year. Snowflake, down 40%. Zoom, Peloton, all off 40%. Tesla, Dom showed it to you, down 30% this year. Salesforce, off by 27%. Nvidia, 18%. And even old, reliable Apple, normally sort of immune to cyclical moves and concerns about interest rates, it is down 16% this year. Let us bring in now Dan Genter. He is Genter. He is CEO and CIO of RNC Genter Capital Management. And Rod Von Lipsey, Managing Director at UBS Private Wealth Management. Dan, I understand the others. I understand the valuation argument. You got to pay more for earnings when interest rates move. I think I don't understand Apple. What is Apple getting caught up in all of this tell you about the way that investors are viewing this market?
Well, Brian, I think you're just dealing with a pure valuation rotation. I mean, you have a situation to where certainly in 2020 and during the pandemic, I mean, the market was really led by a handful of stocks that really went to stratospheric multiples. And certainly Apple was one of those. I mean, Apple certainly has real earnings. They have real sales. They're going to be there. They're going to be a major player. You know, but when you have people that are just following a momentum trade, eventually the professional investors say, you know, these multiples are just too hard to maintain. They start to take money off the table. They're at least taking partial profits, if not full profits. That starts to turn the momentum. And then the momentum players start to jump out. And I think that's what you're seeing. Tech is not dead. It's certainly going to be a major player. And we're in a situation to where people shouldn't abandon the sector altogether. But it's probably a position that they really have to look at fundamentals. They have to look at where the earnings are going to be. They shouldn't be overweighted in individual stocks. And they should no longer be overweighted in the sector. Bring it back to neutral.
Yeah, and Rod, I'm not trying to dump on Apple here. I'm just using them as the biggest stock in the world and a stock that normally doesn't get, some say, the valuation respect that it might deserve. It normally trades at a price to sales. I'm looking back here for the last couple of years here. And it's, you know, somewhere in the price to book of 5 to 4 to 6. It's now at 33. Did the market simply get way ahead of itself last year with big tech and is now saying, we've made our money, let's go find profit somewhere else?
I think that's exactly what investors are telling us, and we're seeing the market look at it. Investors are thinking that once we start getting remobilized, all of that technology, we still need it. We don't want to dump it. We're going to continue to embrace it, but not just as much as we needed to in the last year when we were all in shutdown mode. And so I think that what you're seeing is a recalibration, a reassessment of what's the forward-looking growth opportunities and expectations of where investors can expect reasonable growth and a reasonable return on their investment. And so we are really trying to make sure that we stay focused on where the markets are moving and where we see opportunities to invest. And we're trying to not have inflation fatuation. The inflation, we're concerned, big move today. But we don't see that as a long-term challenge, especially when we look at it at an absolute level of the 10-year Treasury being right back to where it was going into the pandemic a year ago.
Yeah, you know, Dan, I know there's a lot of people out there that are probably frustrated by this move, but most of those people, if they've been holders for more than, you know, a cup of coffee, have made a lot of money. They've made a lot of money on this trade over the last couple of years. I can't blame anybody for saying, okay, you know what? We rode the Apple cart for 10 years. Let's take the profit, put it in something that we view as undervalued. I know you've got some picks, Bristol Myers and others. There are other, maybe better ways to make money than Apple and technology right now, are there not?
Well, Brian, I think you're right. And I think what people are seeing is that the whole technology sector right now, if you look at the S&P, it's trading at about a 26 multiple. You know, the market itself is at 22. So that's a pretty significant premium. And so in line with what we're discussing, I think people are just taking some chips off the table. You know, they're beginning to see that clearly we're going to have a significant reopening trade. I mean, we're likely to be at a close to a 5% GDP run rate as we move into the third quarter of this year. So certainly looking at the companies, the energy companies obviously are leading the way this year. Those are even getting a little bit toppy, up 30%. But there's still some good healthcare companies. There are some great financial companies that are going to benefit from higher rates as their net interest margins get better. And even in the technology space, I mean, you have a Cisco that didn't participate last year, and it's trading at half the market multiple for the sector. So there's clearly some good things out there. And most of those issues are paying over 3% in dividends. Hold you out while you wait.
Oh, and what about, we didn't even get into the energy trade and those dividends, but we will next time. Rod, we'll get you back on again soon. We got to keep it moving today, guys. Dan and Rod, thank you very much. Okay, so maybe oil stocks are the new darlings of Wall Street. Oil and oil stocks jumping today. OPEC Plus agreeing to keep output mostly unchanged. And the Saudis saying they're not going to put that extra million barrel per day cut that they surprised the market with over a month ago back onto the market until at least May. Overall, the OPEC Plus meeting, again, virtual, was a pretty big surprise, causing some big moves. Let's bring in someone who I haven't seen in about 4 minutes and who has not missed an OPEC meeting in her career, Halima Croft, RBC Capital Markets. I mean, we were on that
yes.
Our viewers, like, what are you talking about? We're on the OPEC press conference. It's 12:55. I'm asking Abdulaziz a question, thinking I've got to host a show in 5 minutes. I jumped off. I loved what Abdulaziz bin Salman, the Saudi energy minister, said at the end. I asked him what would his message be to U.S. oil production companies, and he said, drill, baby, drill is over. What did you make of OPEC? What did you make of that call?
Well, he's clearly not a Sarah Palin fan. But seriously, I mean, this was a surprise ending. I mean, there was speculation going into this meeting that Saudi might start phasing back in those million barrels they have sitting off the market. But His Royal Highness wants us to be clear that he's not bringing back those barrels until he has clear signs that we've turned the corner on COVID-19. He keeps talking about the need to see shots in the arm. He's not taking the super cycle theory for granted. We're going to have to wait and see when those barrels come back. But he's going to be very, very cautious.
And does this mean the Saudis are not concerned with market share? They're more concerned with price. Because if it's the latter, Halima, that is a huge gift to U.S. oil and gas producers. There are many stocks that have more than doubled this year, in part because of that Saudi surprise cut.
I think the Russians have been the ones most concerned about U.S. shale production. They are the ones saying we do not want to cede market share to U.S. producers and then get sanctioned by the U.S. government. The Saudis have been consistently saying for the past couple of years, we're going to have to live with shale. We're not looking to price shale out of business. What I think is interesting, Brian, though, is when will the White House make the call to Saudi Arabia? For the past 4 years, Donald Trump was picking up the phone and calling OPEC and calling the kingdom whenever you had prices rise significantly. I think what's really going to be different this time is I don't expect that the Biden administration is going to place that call for a while.
Well, just remember, and without diving too much into the dirty politics of it, Halima, the Democrats, while they'll talk about, you know, anti-fossil fuels in some cases, they're also eyeballing Texas as a potential blue swing, at least certain seats. I mean, they've got to play that dance delicately in Texas, do they not?
No, absolutely. But I think what is, again, is so interesting, Brian, if this had been a year ago and you had oil prices move like this on a decision basically made by Saudi Arabia, you would have expected President Trump to be tweeting. I'm just wondering what, you know, Joe Biden's price target is going to be. When would he ever make the call? Would you have to be at $100 oil to make the call, or is no call coming? And so will Saudi Arabia and will OPEC have a lot more running room in terms of the relations with the U.S. on this?
Long way to go. And Halima, I'll reiterate my call. June 6th, Austria will be there in person in that doggone stairwell. I know I'll swim if I have to. Halima Croft, great stuff.
I will be there. Thank you.
Can't wait. Thank you, Halima. All right. Lots to do here on this show. Coming up, recruiters are feeling the most optimistic since the start of the pandemic. Why not? And they're seeing some very interesting trends in hiring. We have got the details coming up next. And while investors have been leaving tech recently, they're flocking into media. Look at that. In just 1 month, Fox up 28%, Discovery Networks up 48%. It's doubled in a few months, and Viacom CBS up 37%. We're going to call that 2021 jump streak. Why is this happening? And is that rally justified? We'll talk to somebody about it later on. NASDAQ down 300. We're back after this.
This is The Exchange on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
All right, welcome back. The sell-off of the markets continues to pick up steam, particularly in the world of big cap tech. Yeah, the Dow's down 360, but all the focus is going to be on technology and the NASDAQ and that ETF right there. That, of course, the ARK Innovation ETF run by Cathie Wood and her team. This was a gigantic winner in 2020, probably the biggest single asset gatherer in the world on a percentage basis last year, if not certainly close to it. People wrote it up. Well, it is now officially in correction, which means down 20% or more from its highs. In fact, it is down 20.5% in just 30 days. The ARK Innovation ETF off 6.5%. Why are we showing you this? Well, just remember, when you have ETFs and you've got investment vehicles that even theoretically, whether or not it's actually owning shares or some sort of proxy for owning shares, when those get sold, often a lot of other assets have to be sold as well. So when we see these big sell-offs for names like that, it's going to have this trickle-down effect onto so many other things, particularly the stocks like a Tesla that are in that ARK Innovation ETF. Maybe no instrument or ETF or index is important to watch right now as that one, ARKK, and we're going to keep showing it to you throughout the hour and throughout the day. All right, growing vaccinations, COVID cases and hospitalizations crashing, and more hope on a full national reopening by spring or summer. Parts of the country pretty much open already. That's all boosting the job market. And recruiter sentiment last month surging to a 3.7 out of 5. That's actually the highest reading since the pandemic began. Let's welcome in Evan Sohn. He is chairman and CEO of Recruiter.com. Evan, obviously, pandemic is not over yet. There's still a lot of cases, a lot of concern. A lot of families have a lot of worries out there. Don't want to make any light of that. But there is a gigantic light at the end of the tunnel, perhaps sooner than later. What are your recruiter clients and customers and followers? What are they telling you right now?
Well, thanks for having me on your show, Brian. Always good to see you. And you're right. The sentiment is the highest it's been since we started the index about 10 months ago. And, you know, despite the cold weather, it's the warmest that recruiters in our index are seeing the job market over now 50% at 54% in terms of warmth of the job market itself. The impact of COVID is down to now 17% on their overall workloads that they have. The workload itself, meaning the number of jobs that the average recruiter is working on in the index, is still at 18. You know, we're waiting for that spike. We still haven't seen that yet. You know, we've seen some spikes, and I think you just showed in the last slide on the skilled labor. So one of the spikes that we saw this past month was that skilled labor, in terms of like HVAC systems you were talking about, you know, the master carpenter, the master pipe welder, that spiked over the month from 1% in January to 9% in February. And we usually use that as a leading indicator of some of the new markets that are going to be opening up. You know, just to recall, we saw that same spike back in November with transportation and logistics jobs. And then we saw in December a big spike in the transportation stops. So seeing that now in those areas, the talented, skilled area, is optimistic for that manufacturing sector, which is slightly below 60% in terms of optimism. The most interesting thing there, and we're still waiting for that spike to happen, it's got to happen from someplace, is that not one of the recruiters saw jobs decreasing in the manufacturing sector. So that's actually very, very optimistic. Wow. The outlook over the next 90 days. Yes.
Yeah, look at that. Learn to code, right? Become a nurse or a doctor, healthcare there as well. And the trade school stuff. I mean, Evan, we ignore it so much, and it's sad because you can come out of college with $100,000 in debt and a C-minus average in ancient Greek philosophy as a major, or you could learn how to install stuff. I mean, not being political, the president's proposed spending plan is probably going to be tens of billions on HVAC systems for schools over the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, if you know how to do that, you are going to have a darn good career, probably make a lot of money and have job protection because you could probably just own your own company. Sounds pretty good.
I saw a great article called New Collar. No more white collar, no more blue collar, new collar, new collar skills. I also think saying the old college try is going to be a saying we don't say anymore also. It's about skills. It's about moving these jobs through the overall system. One thing I just want to point out to you is that, you know, despite the fact only 49,000 new jobs were added last month, 5 million people were hired. You know, so we're still hiring lots and lots and lots of people. In a healthy economy, people are looking for new jobs. They're looking to make their lives better. So that is still happening. And so what we need to do as an industry is figure out how do we onboard more people in a given month.
Agreed. Help wanted signs everywhere near me in New Jersey as well. Evan Sohn, recruiter.com. Better days certainly ahead. Evan, we appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Coming up, a big blow to Apple and Google in Arizona. A new proposed bill that would change the App Store as they know it and maybe hit Apple's bottom line, passing its first hurdle. We're going to speak with two of the representatives behind that proposal. Coming up, Bitcoin down $2,500, 5%. The NASDAQ off more than 300. Big tech taking a beating. We're going to show you more as this market sell-off ramps up. Coming up next on The Exchange.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
What am I seeing? All right, you can see market alert there because there is a big sell-off happening right now, particularly in big cap tech. It's not every day that you see the NASDAQ on a number basis competing with the Dow for a drop of the same size. The Dow's down 458. The NASDAQ's down 318. But look at the percentage basis. NASDAQ's down 1% more than the Dow. It is the big cap sell-off that is driving this, the ARK ETF, which we just showed you, ARKK. And a shout out to our friend, John Spallanzani of Miller Value Partners, talking about Stratasys and some of these other names in that ARK ETF that are down 9, 10, 12, 15%. The high momentum, high value names getting hit hard today in part because that big move in the 10-year yield. If we look at the sectors, energy has no problems. Oil is up 5% right now. Energy and utilities, the only two sectors in the green. That OPEC meeting giving another boost to oil prices at $65 a barrel. And energy stocks are soaring today. Consumer discretionary, materials, technology, they are some of your laggards right now. As we talked about Stratasys, KE Holdings, and others, they are down big. All right, let's get a CNBC News update. Step briefly out of the markets. For that, let's go to Courtney Reagan.
Hi, Brian. Here's what's happening at this hour. President Biden authorized two airstrikes in Syria last month, but the Wall Street Journal says the second was called off while bombers were en route to their target. because a woman and child were spotted at one of the sites. A new report shows the Transportation Department's watchdog asked the Justice Department to criminally investigate then-Secretary Lane Chao over concerns she allegedly misused her office to promote her family's shipping business. The Justice Department declined to pursue that case. A United Nations human rights investigator says Myanmar's military has murdered, beaten, and illegally arrested protesters since its coup last month. He is urging the UN Security Council to impose a global arms embargo and economic sanctions on the junta. And in Florida, manatee deaths are spiking, with a doubling since last year. Researchers think climate change and a lack of food are part of the reason. Watch the news with Shepard Smith tonight to see what other causes are being examined and what's being done to help the manatees. That's our CNBC News update for this hour. Brian, back over to you.
All right, my guess is, Courtney, everybody but us has moved to Florida. They've all bought boats, and there's a lot more boats, and the natural enemy of the manatee is the propeller. Courtney Reagan, thank you very much.
That's true. Right.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Yes, it is. It really is, and I'll bet you that is the reason. I'm willing to bet it. All right, Arizona State House passing by a vote of 31 to 29. It was close. A bill that would require their app stores in Arizona to allow app makers to choose any payment processor they want, a credit card or another platform. Why is this important? Well, right now, those app stores collect big fees, sometimes as much as 30%. So when the developers use the app store's preferred payment method, some of that may go away and not go to Apple or Google. Regina Cobb and Leo Biasucci are the co-sponsors of the bill. They are both Republican Arizona state representatives, and they join us now. Thank you very much. Representative Cobb, what was the motivation behind this bill proposal?
Well, I had a lobbyist that I've been working with for several years. He and I did my very first bill that I ever passed in the House 7 years ago, and came to me with the issue. I felt like it needed a hearing. I felt like it needed to be moved. And I decided that I would take this issue on. And of course, big tech as it is right now, and the issues that we're having with big tech, I think it's the perfect time to be able to look at some of these issues and create some equality amongst all of the members, all of the platforms.
So, Representative Biasucci, where is the bill now? Has it passed yet? And if it does pass, what do you think that's going to mean for Arizonans? Is it going to mean more money that's coming in? And do you have an estimate on maybe how much might come in?
Yeah, so right now it just passed the House, and it's going to go off to the Senate, which it'll go through the same process, go through committees, go to the floor, and then hopefully it passes there to go to the governor for a signature. And, we're confident that, you know, this is something that can pass. I mean, this is about fairness, right? You know, what Representative Cobb touched on and you spoke about, you know, you have these companies who are trying to develop an app, and they have two sectors. They can go to the Apple Store, they can go to the Google Play Store only. And when they're being told that they can only accept the Apple payment system or the Google payment system, and they can't take credit cards, Amex, Visa, MasterCard, we just don't think that's right. And when they're charging 30%, that's even more, just to me, is ridiculous. I mean, you have companies like Uber, like Lyft, who they're allowing to take Visa, MasterCard, and now you're picking winners and losers. We're all about the free market, and this is something we're pushing for. And, you know, for us, it's all about fairness. Yeah. It's not even a funny thing. It's about fairness.
And also, Representative Cobb, I mean, have you heard from Apple and Google and some tech lobbyists? Are they still smiling, or is it starting to get a little bit tough in the trenches?
Well, I took this on about a week and a half ago, and I tell you, a lot of pressure happened over the first week, and that I had this. Yes, I heard a lot from the lobbyists, and they were putting a lot of pressure on. Once they put too much pressure on, I think they saw that it was backfiring on them, and they decided to back off a little bit. And then the executives decided to meet with me. I met with them last week, and they started changing their lobbying tactics a little bit. But yeah, they've contacted me several times. I've had several meetings with them, trying to come up with something that possibly is a medium between the two things, what they want, yeah, what I want, and it hasn't happened.
Well, keep us informed. We're going to watch it as well. Some of the sharp elbows in the State House of Arizona, Representative Cobb and Biasucci, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up, the TV takeover. As tech stocks fall, media stocks seem to be picking up a lot of the slack. We'll look at why they have seen such a dramatic move and investor dollars coming in and whether or not it's warranted. And as we go to break, the story right now, the 10-year yield and big technology. Yield jumping after Fed Chair Powell's remarks. The NASDAQ going down with it off 300, more than 2%. The yield making a big jump to 1.53%. We're back right after this. All right, welcome back to The Exchange. You can see at the bottom right of your screen there, we have a big market move to tell you about. Stocks are sliding. Dow off 400. NASDAQ, though, tech, again, the story, off more than 2%. Bond yields are on the rise. The 10-year yield making a big jump higher. Following remarks by Fed Chair Jay Powell, the NASDAQ and the NASDAQ 100, both now 10% below their record high. Joining us now is Peter Bookbar. He is Chief Investment Officer at Bleakley Advisory Group, CNBC contributor. Peter, do you think that Chairman Powell and the rest of the Fed is starting to lose control of the bond market?
I do. I think it's clear because what we've seen today with Powell and what we've seen over the past couple weeks is that the more dovish he has sounded, the higher long rates have gone. So the market has a difference of opinion. Now, when inflation is low...
And what's the connection?
Well, when inflation is low, the Fed can do what they want without any long-term rate implications. When the market believes that inflation is rising, that inflation potentially could be an issue, and you have a Fed that's extremely dovish, then the bond market's going to tighten for them. And that's exactly what we're seeing here. The bond market's not going to wait around for Jay Powell to decide when he wants to raise short-term interest rates. They're going to do it for him, and that's what we're seeing now.
Let me flip it. Do we care that we've gone from 0.6% to 1.5%, Peter? Because, yes, a percentage move, it's a big one, but it's not as if we've gone to 3 or 3.5%. To the Fed Chair's point, the comps, the comparisons are extremely easy.
Well, two things. Remember, it was only, I emphasize, a 2.5% Fed funds rate that broke the markets in the fourth quarter of 2018 that made Powell completely reverse himself. And number two, when you're talking about the massive debt pile that we've accumulated around the world, particularly in the U.S., it only takes small changes in interest rates to have a big dollar impact.
Well, that debt, I mean, we could talk about modern monetary theory if the stimulus plan gets passed, and I don't know if it should or not, $1.9 trillion is, by the way, as we can kind of see, hopefully the finish line to all of this. That's going to have to be repaid by somebody that's our kids and our grandkids as well. You can't inflate your way out of it. Scott Minard made that point a couple of days ago on the show. Do you think that's ultimately how we get out of this? Or we just live with debt, middle class taxes will have to go up. At some point, you're going to have to pay it back.
Well, on paper, it sounds like one lane to go down, but just inflate out of this. But in reality is that assumes that interest rates remain equal. But they're not. The interest rates are not just going to sit around and let the Fed allow inflation get to a point where it's inflating away this debt. There's going to be a violent move higher in interest rates. So that's the problem with that. I think the Fed is left with a very uncomfortable situation because what we're seeing again, and I'll repeat, the more dovish they sound, the more the bond market's going to tighten for them as long as the bond market sees these inflation pressures continuing to intensify. So counterintuitively, the Fed is actually going to have to start to sound less dovish if they want to get back control of the bond market.
Yeah, because you wonder if they have any control over employment. This is not a traditional recession. It's hard to add a job when a government says you can only have 25% of your customers in your store. So instead of having 10 servers, you have two. This is not a run-of-the-mill financial crisis that can be monetized out of. I guess we're going to find out. Peter Bookbar with the Bleakley Advisory Group. Peter, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Maybe getting kids in school is a good way to add jobs. All right, coming up, from the vaccine rollout to legalized weed, 2021 is shaping up to be a lot different than the last year for the Garden State, thankfully. But what is the financial future of New Jersey? Governor Phil Murphy will join us next. NASDAQ off-session low is still down 2%. The Exchange is back in two. Well, perhaps no state was hit harder by the early days of COVID than New Jersey. Cases were running rampant in March and April. Lots of people lost their lives. And as a resident of New Jersey, I can just tell you this. It was a very, very scary time for a number of months. But the vaccine rollout is booming, and we are learning something rather surprising. The financial collapse that many feared simply didn't happen. In fact, according to J.P. Morgan, most states have flat to even higher revenues because everyone's sitting around and ordering stuff online and buying real estate. New Jersey saying it will fully fund its pension system for the first time since 1996. Joining us now with more on these developments is Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey. Governor Murphy, it's good to chat with you again. I feel like, because we spoke in March and April of last year, I feel like we can see sort of the finish line. We're not out of the woods. I understand that. I know you just spoke with Alex Gorsky, CEO of J&J. Can you give us first an update on when we can expect that J&J shot at the local CVS?
Yeah, good to be with you, Brian. Good to be back. And I do think times are better, but I would say we're also not out of the woods yet. Great conversations with Alex. His team have been phenomenal. First shot in the arms in Jersey from the J&J vaccine tomorrow morning, likely in Hudson County. And this is a powerful vaccine. I want to make sure I say that unequivocally, particularly if you're really sick or if you're concerned about really sick, hospital, or God forbid, dying. This is just as good as the other two. And we're making, you know, we're up to 2.25 million shots in the arms. We got several millions still to go. I think March will be an incremental increase in our supply, and I think it'll go up in a quantum fashion in April and May, and we've built the distribution system out up and down the state, and we can't wait to get more shots in the arms.
Yeah, and I know for a fact from friends that it is starting to roll through. People I know that have been on lists, they are getting calls. Are you still working to streamline that online? It's still a bit of a hurdle, you know, especially for the elderly. You got to have your friends and family that are kind of working the angles for you here, Governor. Are we figuring it out every week?
Yeah, I think it's better by the day, Brian. It's not a straight line. We had some big vendor issues with the online registration. Those have been happily largely worked through. We realized seniors who are not online facile, we needed to set up a call center, which we did. Now a couple of months ago, that's up now to many hundreds of folks answering the phones, finally now making appointments for folks, multiple languages. It's one day to the next, but the progress is unmistakable. Folks who are not yet scheduled are frustrated and they want to get scheduled. I completely understand that. There's a supply-demand imbalance, but we're going to get to you, I promise you. Folks who have gone through and actually have gotten their vaccines, the overwhelming response has been one of the great processes I've gone through medically in my life, and we hope to have millions of more stories like that.
Okay, Governor, I like to go to Seaside Heights in the summer. That's my beach of choice. And, you know, there's a special type of person in Ocean County, right? Some of them might say, well, we're done with masks. Forget about it, as they might say. I saw it last summer in person. There's going to be a push to open up like a Texas. You know this is coming once the cases start to continue to go down. Hopefully they will, and hospitalizations continue to go down as well. What's your thinking on that? Do you see a time this summer when New Jersey will, quote, be fully reopened?
Yeah, by the way, I spent a lot of time in Seaside Heights in the summer, too, so we should compare notes. My wife and I jog along the boardwalk regularly. Great community. Yeah, I do. I think we're going to, first of all, back to the vaccine. I think if you want to get a vaccine, and God willing, we'll get at least 4.7 million adults. That's our objective in New Jersey, to get a vaccine. If you want to get one by Memorial Day, we're going to be there for you. I'm highly confident of that. That's assuming the feds deliver the goods and the Biden team have been great. I believe they will. Secondly, we've already begun to take baby steps to reopen, and assuming the vaccine rollout continues, that we don't have these variants that overwhelm us. There's no question, Brian, we're going to continue to open up, and we're going to get to, I believe, a much more normal summer on the shore. Having said that, I still believe when you're inside in close proximity to other people, at least for the foreseeable future, I think you're going to have to be careful to be distant and probably on the margin wear a mask. I think if you and I are out on the boardwalk, running, going over the dunes to go onto the beach, in our backyard. I think it's a much more typical, mm-hmm. normal summer, but I think we will get there.
I want to ask you for a friend of mine. His name's Mike, and he owns the Right Coast Surf Shop in Seaside Park, right across from Betty and Nick's at the B&B department store. You're helping the pensions. That's great. First payment since 1996. Truly unbelievable. Governor, do you have any plans to continue to help the small businesses of this state, like Mike at Right Coast and others that have just been crushed?
Hey, Brian, by the way, the full payment in 96 was $228 million. The full payment in this budget, $6.4 billion, $5.6 billion of which is to make up for the intervening 25 years of delinquency in payments. To your friend with the small business, our Economic Development Authority, Redevelopment Authority, Department of Community Affairs have helped, I think at this point, 60 or 70,000 small businesses. Tell him I promise him we will continue to get every penny we can. What really would help us right now, mm-hmm. is the federal rescue package that's being debated in Congress. And tell him I promise if we get that through, we get those monies, we will deliver it directly into small businesses, restaurants, the folks who need it the most.
And I want to say thank you, by the way. I'm going out to dinner tonight, Governor Murphy, because you didn't shut down when New York and Pennsylvania did. 25%, you could still go out. Tip generously if you do. Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey. Governor, we appreciate your time. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
All right, take care. All right, so the NASDAQ, now 10% from its highs. But one group has just ignored all that and has been on fire. That is the TV stocks, because despite a wealth of streaming services, TV remains sort of the new TV. We're going to talk about whether that recent rally will continue and make you money next. Well, don't look now, but so-called traditional media stocks have been on fire lately. Take a look at the one-month performance of some of these names. AMC Networks, not the GameStop AMC stock. This is the networks. Discovery, Viacom, Fox, they're all soaring in a month. By the way, Comcast is at record highs. Netflix is down 4%. Their year-to-date moves are even more impressive. In fact, Discovery and Viacom CBS are the top two stocks in the S&P 500 since January 1st. With us now are Andrew Wallenstein. He is president and chief media analyst at Variety Intelligence Platform, as well as Michael Morris, senior managing director at Guggenheim Securities. Michael, start with you. What's behind this sudden reinterest of investors?
Yeah, it's a great question, Brian. I think there's two things that are really going on right now. One has to do with the fundamentals of the business, and one has to do with just some of the dynamic of ownership and short selling in the marketplace. To the first point, you know, these companies have spent the better part of the last year or two really transitioning their businesses from being linear or traditional business first distribution, our traditional networks that we're used to really putting their streaming foot forward, if you will, making investments in those businesses and making their content available outside of that traditional pay TV bundle. And while that certainly comes with risks that I'm happy to talk about, it also has helped address this concern around terminal values that have been there as we've seen the declines from cord cutting and ratings declines. But at the same time, I don't think you should overlook the fact that these have been heavily shorted names for a very long time. We've seen a dynamic in the marketplace where these shorted names have been squeezed upward. I can't tell you for sure that's what's happening, but we have seen short interest in these names come down. And I do believe that that's part of the dynamic there as well.
Andrew, would you agree with that? Or is there something else at work here that I'm just not seeing?
Oh, I think you're right to question it. I think this is the height of market irrationality. The notion that all of these companies, just because they're investing in streaming, are set up for the future is absolutely ludicrous. It's as if the market has drunk the Disney Plus Kool-Aid and just assumes everyone following that plan is going to do just as well, when I can assure you there's going to be winners, and Disney Plus will be among them, and many of the stocks you just showed on your screen will ultimately prove to be losers. There's only so many streaming services that consumers are going to buy, and a lot of these new players in this market are not coming with the same kind of weight that Netflix and Disney can bring to the table.
Yeah, but you know, Michael, it does, from an analysis perspective, just, you know, the balance sheets, I mean, have the balance sheets improved? I'm not picking on anybody, but there's talk about rating struggles on certain news networks now. I mean, it doesn't appear the fundamental business has gotten any better, or has it?
Well, Brian, and I think that this speaks to Andrew's point as well. I think that professional and institutional investors have a lot of skepticism toward the ability of each of these companies to be the winner that is implied by the stock moves that you've seen in these names. I have buy ratings on certain stocks. For example, I agree with Andrew about Disney. We've been big bulls on Netflix. Brian, I've spoken with you plenty of times over the last 5+ years about Netflix and why we like that name. I think that there is no other choice for these companies than to make their product available directly to consumers. And I think that hope can spring eternal when we're in a period where we're only focused on subscriber growth and not necessarily looking at the consolidated economics. But I do agree with Andrew. Mm-hmm. I think once you see the consolidated financial results for the companies, those results have to grow. That's the combination of the new investment in streaming plus that mature linear traditional business. If those in combination are not growing, I think that the recent enthusiasm for the shares does run into some challenges.
Andrew, 20 seconds. Do we all just end up paying $5 a month for all this stuff, or are there going to be some winners and losers?
I think we're going to see losers emerge, maybe not anytime soon, but it will happen. Keep your eye on Paramount Plus today. It's a new streaming service, late to the game, a lot lacking. I don't know.
Okay. Andrew, Michael, good conversation, guys, on a hot sector. Guys, thank you very much. Do appreciate that. And as we head to break here, folks, the Dow is now down 631 points. Technology continues to sell off. The NASDAQ down 400. The pace of the sell-off has accelerated pretty dramatically. The Dow off 600 as the yield curve moves up. Almost every stock in the NASDAQ 100 is down. And the ARK Innovation ETF, ARKK, is down big as well, maybe driving some of this along with that yield curve. That does it for us.
You've been listening to The Exchange. Make sure you're subscribed to get each episode every day, same time, same place.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.